Certainly enjoyed good singing today. That contributes so much to what we try to do, and the singing has just been excellent. Good to hear that. One of the things that you can say about the Apostle Paul was you never had to wonder how he felt about something. If he wanted you to know something, and it was something he needed to be blunt about, Paul was blunt. And the passage that I want to use as a basis for our study this afternoon is one of many such passages. Galatians chapter 3 and verse 1. You foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you, before whose eyes Jesus Christ was portrayed publicly as crucified? This is the only thing I want to find out from you. And then he asks some questions. One of the things about Bible study that we need to remember is don't stick with just one translation. Compare translations. I think this is the English Standard Version that I used here. But in studying this passage, I went over to the Amplified Bible and absolutely found that Amplified Bible's treatment of this verse to be outstanding. And wrong button. Let's look at it. Oh, you poor and silly and thoughtless and unreflecting and senseless Galatians. You think he had a problem with what they were doing? Who has fascinated or bewitched or cast a spell over you? Unto whom, right before your very eyes, Jesus Christ the Messiah was openly and graphically set forth and portrayed as crucified. They nail that verse. They absolutely nail it. That is exactly what Paul was saying. Take a look at just some phrase by phrase, word by word. Oh, you foolish Galatians. They were doing something that was just absolutely folly. And I'm going to use a word, and I'm not going to apologize for it. It's a good word, and it occurs in a lot of biblical translations. And the word is stupid. Now, I know that it's one of the no-no words, but it's a good word. And there are some people who act in such a way they deserve to be called stupid. And there are some things that people do that the actions are nothing but stupid. That's what these were doing. That's what Paul is saying here. You foolish, you stupid people. Then he said, by using the word bewitched, he said, has somebody cast a spell on you? Now, he knew that there hadn't been. He didn't believe in that kind of nonsense. This was some light sarcasm here. Has somebody put you under a spell? Has somebody dangled something in front of your eyes and you just went starry-eyed and all of a sudden you lost all senses? That's what he's saying. And then he said, you've had such great teaching. He's saying that Jesus Christ had been portrayed, whoever it was that had preached among them, he said Jesus Christ was preached among you in such a clear way, it is almost as if he was crucified literally before your eyes. That's how plain the teaching was. That's how good the teaching was. And in spite of that, you're acting stupid. You're acting foolish like somebody that's had a spell cast upon them. And then he said, based upon your folly, based upon this spell that you're under, based upon the fact that you have had such tremendous teaching, he said, I want to ask you some questions. I just want to ask you some questions. Now, the context of this was the Galatians flirting with going back under the old law. And Paul is just amazed that they would do something that foolish. And this is the context in which he makes this appeal. Do Christians today ever do that? And you could take Galatians 3:1 and just substitute the word Christian in the place of Galatians. No. We never do anything like that, do we? Oh, yeah. Christians today, and from time to time I see Christians doing things and I think, oh, can't believe it. You had such good teaching. And what you are about to do or what it is that you are engaged in doing, it's just dumb. It's just the most foolish thing in the world. Why in the name of Scripture are you doing what you're doing? Those of you who are parents, you've never had your children act that way, have you? Where you want to say, what in the world? You know better. You ever hear the things that we talked about? You never listened to the preaching in church and Bible classes? Oh, yeah. We've all been down that road. Every one of us. And so there are some questions I want to ask this afternoon. But before we ask the questions that I want to ask, there are some preliminary questions. And you're going to think these are just silly questions to ask. But here we go. You want to go to heaven? Well, of course. I mean, why? We're here, aren't we? Well, of course I want to go to heaven. I mean, that's just a given. Okay. That's good. I'm glad that you want to go to heaven. That's just... And I'm serious. That's a wonderful, wonderful statement to make and feeling to have. You want to go to heaven? Good. You want to follow Christ? Okay, well, of course, I call myself a Christian. And a Christian is a follower of Christ. And, well, certainly I want to follow Christ. He's my Lord. He's my Master. And we say these wonderful things and, okay, that's great that you want to follow the Lord. What about Bible study? And I'm not talking about 9:30 Sunday morning or 9:45 or whenever it is. I'm not talking about that kind of Bible study. Is personal Bible study important to you? Is it important to you that you... And I'm not talking about daily Bible reading. And I'm not putting down daily Bible reading. That, not at all. But I'm talking about study. Serious, get down with it and really dig deep and study God's Word. Is that important to you? Well, of course it ought to be, because that is the food that we grow on spiritually. And that's exactly right. Personal Bible study. In addition to the public Bible study, that it ought to mean so much to us. And if you're inwardly saying, yes, I believe in Bible study being important, that's great. And then do you want to live as the Bible teaches? And once you've studied it, and once you've found out the Bible teaches me to do and to be this and not to do and not to be that, Is that what you want to do? You've committed your life to Bible study and to abiding by the teaching of the Bible? Well, of course, I've got my Bible in my lap right now. Listen, yeah, okay, that's wonderful. What about assemblies like this? Are assemblies like this meaningful to you? Do you not just enjoy seeing other people, but there's a spiritual benefit in being with other Christians, and you don't know what you'd do if you couldn't assemble with people who feel as you do. And again, everyone here probably saying, of course, I believe that. Absolutely. And the questions get sillier, I guess, for some people. Do you love God more than anything or anyone else? Do you? These are all very important questions. And that one, you want your children, those of you who aren't married yet, and those of you that are married and just planning a family eventually, you want your children raised on biblical principles. And you're thinking, get to the real questions. These, of course, the answer to all of these is yes, absolutely. Okay. Now, let's talk about some things. Oh, foolish Christian. Just one question. It's really not just one. I've got about three or four. Just some questions. In view of the good Bible teaching that you've had, and in view of your answers to those questions up there, why in the world do we make decisions that negatively impact every single one of those questions? Why would we do something like that? The Bible is so clear about going to heaven, following Christ, Bible, all of that. It's just so clear. And you understand that. And you give your assent to that. Then why do you want to make decisions that will make it difficult, if not impossible, to do every single one of those? Now, let's get specific. Why in the world do you want to make as your very best, dearest friend people who share none of those values and interests? Now, let me be real quick to say, I'm not saying that you can't have a friend, that you shouldn't have a friend that's not a Christian. I'm not saying that. But it just astounds me, in view of our alleged dedication to all of those things, those questions, that the friends that we pick, the people that we're closest to, the people that we confide in, the people that we'll run to in time of crisis and trouble. I've seen it. Maybe you have too. Time after time after time. People want to go to heaven. They're not following Christ. Following the Bible, it doesn't mean anything to them. It's just raising kids according to... And yet, they're my best friend. They're the ones I hang with. They're the ones that I go to. We know what 1 Corinthians 15 says. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. Now, in that context, I'm not sure he's talking about friendship exactly in the same way that we mean it. I think in the context, he's talking about those who are false teachers, especially in regard to the resurrection. But the principle is there. And of course, the importance of friendship is taught throughout the Bible. And I used to say that this was particularly and especially applicable to the young people. But I've seen people the age of young people's parents and grandparents make friendships with individuals who will simply do nothing but tear them down spiritually. They will not help them go to heaven. They do not care about Bible study or following what the Bible teaches. Things pertaining to church assemblies mean nothing to them. And yet those are going to be our best friends. Oh, foolish Christian, why in the world do you want to do something like that? Oh, foolish Christian, why do you want to marry somebody who shares absolutely none of those concerns with you? I've referenced 1 Kings 11 there. You know the context of that. King Solomon, you don't have to have 1,000 women to turn your heart away from God. You need one. That's all it takes. Other than a person's decision about whether or not they're going to obey the gospel and become a Christian, I can't think of another decision that a person makes that's more important than who they're going to marry. I can't. Share something personal with you. Way back before my wife got sick and eventually died, I used to say that if something ever happened to her and I was ever in the position to marry again, it would scare me to death. I still believe that. Still believe it. Not, I'll get personal. Remarry, be nice, yeah. But am I going to be very, very careful about that decision if that ever comes about? Oh, yeah. After having been married for 39 years and knowing firsthand the impact that one spouse has upon the other, all of the ramifications of the closest physical relationship in the world, why in the world, in spite of the good teaching that we've had, and in spite of everything that we know, why do you want to marry somebody that doesn't give a flip about those things? Let me calm down. I don't understand it. And I guess I know now how Paul got so emotional about the Galatians and what they were flirting with doing. When I see people, and again, you don't have to be a young person to make this dumb mistake. I've seen people in my situation as old as me that remarried. It was not good spiritually at all. You don't have to be young to make that dumb mistake. Young people, let me plead with you. There's this old man talking out. Okay. I've just been there and I know. Young people, there's something a whole lot worse than never being married. There's something a whole lot worse than that. And that's waking up one day married to somebody who you realize is not going to help you go to heaven, and they don't care. And they're not going to help your kids go to heaven, and they don't care. And yet you're going to have to live with them for the rest of your life. Be careful before you make that decision. And don't let it be one of those old foolish Galatians things. Why, Christians, would we consider moving someplace? Now, you may think I'm getting a little picky here. No, just go back to Lot, who decided to move to Sodom and Gomorrah. Of course, Lot was ignorant of what was going on over there, wasn't he? No. From the context of Genesis 13 and all the other things, Sodom and Gomorrah had a pretty widespread reputation. It's like somebody today saying, I don't know what goes on in New Orleans. Really? You mean San Francisco's like that? Oh, come on. You know. And in Lot's day, Lot knew. He knew. And he moved there anyhow. Why in the world do Christians today want to put themselves, their spouse, their children into geographical localities that are perhaps known for a lack of spirituality, a lack of respect for God, a lack of family values? Why in the world would we make the conscious choice to do something that foolish in spite of all the Bible stories told about Lot? You know about that. Why do you want to do it? Lot lost his wife. He lost his family. Now, I know that Peter called him righteous Lot. But in the process, Lot lost a great deal when he made that stupid decision. And we can lose our children. We can lose our marriages by simply making the decision, I will move there. No brethren there. No group of brethren meeting. They're just nothing there spiritually. And you're going to do that. That's where you're going to put your family. And yet we give all the right answers to those questions up there. And I can't figure it out. Why would we want to go off to school and spend 4 years, 6 years or whatever, pursuing a degree path, deciding that we're going to have X as our occupation, when it would be an occupation that would put us in contact with some of the worst people in the world, godless people, people not spiritually minded, and yet 8, 10, 12, 14 hours a day, that's where I'm going to be. That's exactly what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to expose myself to. You want to do that? When almost 24/7 you're going to be around people who don't believe in God, who don't want to go to heaven, there are no brethren there, nothing. But yet, that's where we're going to place ourselves. And I look at people like that and I say, oh foolish Christian, why? If all of these things really matter to us, why in the world? Paul was willing to give up everything. There in Philippians 3. Willing to give up everything. I count everything as loss. Everything. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So I says, you just don't know what talent I have for doing that. Okay? Maybe you do. Does the use of that talent mean more to you than going to heaven? This would set me up financially. I mean, I would be able... And that means more to you than serving God. I don't understand. It's one thing to give the right answers to those questions up there. It's another thing to live in such a way that reflects, yeah, I really mean those things. Those are things that I really want to do. One final time. Christian, why do you want to make any kind of a decision, whether it's the ones we talked about this afternoon or not, why do you want to make any conscious, deliberate decision that will jeopardize your chances of going to heaven? And then one final question. If tonight or this afternoon you realize that your relationship with God is not what it should be, you realize that if you were to die tonight, you would not be in a saved relationship with God. Oh, foolish person. Why turn your back on an opportunity to obey the Lord, to be immersed in water for the remission of sins, if that's what you need to do? But whatever it is that you need to do, don't continue in your folly. Make up your mind that you want to quit being foolish and be wise and obey God. Really put Him first in your life so that heaven might be your home. We encourage you in that as we stand and while we sing.